as they stood stiffly to attention, all eyes front. They saluted jointly.
Hail Zargina, Wildcat Queen of a Thousand Eyes, ruler of all...
Save your breath, fools! You'll get your chance to speak when I say and not before.
Zargina prowled between the ranks, missing nothing, not even the two pitiful forms that lay bound on the gravel. Fortunata stood rooted to the spot, feeling the queen's feral breath, raising the hairs on the nape of her neck.
Well, fox, seems that you all had a cheery spring outing in the woods. I notice that half the patrols are injured in one way or another. Tell me, did those two small woodlanders put up such a ferocious battle?
Zargina continued circling Fortunata, her voice at a level of dangerous calm.
No need to worry now, eh, fox? We've caught their two champion warriors this time. What, if I may ask, was your heroic part in all this?
Fortunata's limbs trembled with the effort of standing motionless.
It was Claude who caught them, milady. He found them asleep in a tent made from a blanket. Ashleg and I helped to bring them in.
Zargina repeated the phrase slowly.
You helped to bring them in. I see. Good work.
The pine marten was next to receive Sarmina's attention.
Ah, my fearless friend Ashleg, you must be in great pain. Did one of those two bold rogues nibble through your wooden leg?
No, Majesty. That happened when my patrol was attacked by Fortunata's command in the night.
Ashleg blurted out, surprised at the shrillness of his own voice. Zargina widened her eyes in mock horror.
How awful! We attacked ourselves in the dark. No doubt it was all a little mistake.
That's right, milady. Just a bit of a mistake. It could have happened to anyone, really.
Fortunata's protest sounded hollow. The wildcat turned her back on the whole scene. Paws akimbo, she stood staring out toward Mossflower. When she eventually spoke, her tones dripped sarcasm and controlled rage.
Get out of my sight, all of you idiotic scum. Down on your bellies and crawl back into the barracks like the worms you are. That way I won't have to look at your thick, gormless faces slobbering excuses at me. Go on, clear off the lot of you! Fortunata, Ashleg, Clud, bring the prisoners up to my chamber.
Less than a minute later, Argilor stirred on his spruce branch and blinked owlishly, unaware that he had missed the chance of snatching a quick meal from the parade ground. He dozed off again in the hot afternoon sun as Chib shot across the front of him, bound for Brochall and safety. The tiny red-breasted spy had not missed a single word or movement of what took place on the parade ground. A group of sad-faced creatures sat in the main hall of Bella's home. Gonf tossed the blankets and empty cordial jar on the table in front of the Corrim leaders.
"Found them over to the west, about halfway between here and Katia. The place stank of weasel and ferret. Lots of tracks. A big party, I'd say. Anyone got more news?"
Bella looked around the searchers who had returned, checking that the Stickles were not present. She kept her voice low.
Chip saw them trussed up on the parade ground at Katir earlier today. There's no doubt about it. Ferdy and Cogs have been taken prisoner. They were carried off to the Wildcat's chamber for probable questioning.
Skipper slammed the paw against the hearth.
Mates, it doesn't bear thinking about. Those two poor little fellers in the vermin's brig.
Columbine's voice had a sob in it.
What we tell Ben and Goody, poor creatures?
Gonf was in no doubt at all.
Tell them we'll rescue little Ferdy and Cogs back straight away. That's what we'll do, mateys.
There was a roar of approval. Bella called for silence.
Please, Gonf, be sensible. I'm certain that the Corrim will agree to mount a rescue operation as soon as possible. But let's not run off or do anything reckless in the meanwhile. It would only end up in more prisoners being taken or lives being lost.
Bella is right.
Abbess Germaine put in.
I suggest you let me preside over the rescue operation. We can use all of you, especially Chib. He will be of more value to us now than ever before. Meanwhile, let us keep our hopes high and tempers in check.
Bella is very busy working on something else for our benefit with Martin, and they must be excluded from the rescue attempt.
Bella was astonished. She looked blankly at Germaine. The old abbess smiled back at her.
I, too, was out taking the air in the woods early this morning.
Bella bowed to the abbess.
Thank you for offering your help, old friend.
Bella and Martin retired to the study. Immediately Bella closed the door, Martin turned to her.
Bella, I have decided. I will find Bor the fighter. I will undertake the journey to Salamandastrum.
Bella took hold of the warrior's paws.
Are you sure you want to do this thing, Martin?
Martin nodded firmly.
For you and all my friends in Mossflower, I will find this strange place, even if it is at the world's end, and I will bring back your father, Bor the fighter.
The door swung open. Gon Fenton, rubbing a paw to his ear.
Funny things, doors. Sometimes it's as if they're not there, and you can hear everything. By the way, Miss Bella, I'm surprised at you. Fancy sending my matey off on a quest without an able-bodied assistant.
Martin hesitated. He looked to Bella.
I'd feel a lot safer with a good thief along.
The kindly badger smiled.
Of course, careless of me. Welcome, Gonf. We may need a brain as sharp as yours.
They sat on the edge of a scroll-littered desk, while Bella settled comfortably into a dusty old armchair. She sighed and looked from one to the other.
Well, I wish I knew where to begin. Fighting badgers have been going off questing for Salamandastron as far back as memory goes. My grandfather, old Lord Brocktree, went off when I was very small. Then later he was followed by my father, Bor the Fighter.
Is there any record of whether they ever found it? Or are there any maps of the way to Salamandastron?
Martin interrupted. Bella stroked her stripes thoughtfully.
There must be a map somewhere. Both Lord Brocktree and Bor seem to know where they were going. One thing I do know, it would be far too difficult to find the place of dragons without some form of key or map. You would need directions.
Gonf smiled disarmingly. He picked up a bundle of scrolls from the desktop.
Well, mateys, the solution's simple. Let's find the map.
It had been a confused and frightening day for the two little hedgehogs. Since they had been taken by Clud's patrol, not a word had passed between them. Both lay on the floor of Sarmina's room, trying to forget the pains that shot through their bound-up paws and the filthy-tasting gags tied roughly across their mouths. Ferdy snuffled through his nostrils for breath and exchanged glances with Cogs. What must Goody and Ben be doing? Would the Corrim leaders organise a search and a rescue? What lay ahead they could only guess, but it wasn't going to be very pleasant. Sarmina sat watching impassively as Ashleg cut the captives' bonds and relieved them of their gags. Ferdy and Cogs lay quite still, fighting back tears as the circulation was painfully restored to their swollen limbs. Clud stirred the inert forms with his spear point.
They're fit enough, my lady. Wait till their tongues loosen up and we'll see what they've got to say for themselves.
Cogs rolled closer to Ferdy.
Don't tell the villains a thing, matey. Let's be like Martin and Gonf, brave and silent.
His voice was barely above a whisper. Fortunata kicked out cruelly at Cogs. She regretted it immediately as her paw came into contact with his sharp little spines.
Silence, prisoner. Don't you know you're in the presence of Her Majesty, Queen Zarmina?
Ferdy curled his lip rebellishly at the vixen.
She's not Our Majesty. We're woodlanders.
Sarmina leaned forward to the two little creatures lying at the foot of her chair. Bringing her face near them, she slitted her eyes venomously. Baring her great yellowed fangs and extending her fearsome claws, she gave vent to a sudden wild growl. Ferdy and Cogs clutched at each other, their eyes wide with terror. Sarmina laughed and leaned back in her chair.
Now, my two tiny woodland heroes, let's begin, shall we?
The wildcat's expression became almost benevolent as she took a tray of food from a table and sat with it in her lap.
You, Ferdy, or is it Cogs? Wouldn't you like some milk and biscuits? A rosy autumn apple, perhaps? Maybe you prefer dried fruit and nuts. Look, they won't hurt you.
Sarmina bit into an apple, washing it down with a draught of milk. The two small hedgehogs gazed longingly as she ate. They had not tasted food since dawn that morning. Sarmina selected a biscuit, Tossing the apple aside, she nibbled daintily, flicking crumbs from her whiskers. Ferdy licked his lips. Cogs nudged him warningly.
It's probably all poisoned. Don't touch it.
Samina placed the platter on the floor close to them.
Silly. If it were poison, I'd be ill by now. Try it yourself. It's all from my special store. All I want is that you tell me about your woodland friends.
Cogs yawned and muttered wearily.
Don't hear anything, matey. Not a word.
Ferdy yawned. Samina sat watching the two young captives. Their eyelids were beginning to droop, so she decided to try another angle. Stretching luxuriously, she yawned and snuggled deep in the big cushioned chair.
Oh, I bet you two are tired. Wouldn't it be nice to lie down on a bed of clean, fresh straw and sleep for as long as you please? You can too. It's quite simple, really. Just tell me about your friends, who they are, where they live, and so on. I won't harm them. You have my word. They'll thank you for it later when they are truly free. What do you say?
Ferdy blinked hard, fighting back sleep.
Our friends are already free from you.
Samina controlled her mounting temper by burying her claws in a russet apple.
That's as may be. But consider your own position. You two aren't free, and you're not likely to be until you get some sense into your heads and answer my questions. Do you hear me?
The wildcat's threats fell upon deaf ears. Ferdy and Cogs lay with their heads resting against each other, nodding slightly as they snored. They were both fast asleep. Clud touched them gently with his spear butt.
It beats me why you don't string them both up and give them a taste of your claws, my lady. That'd soon make them talk.
Samina's voice was tinged with heavy sarcasm.
You would think that, thick head. How long do you suppose they'd last with that treatment? These two are valuable hostages. Carry them down to the cells and lock them up for the night. We'll see if they are hungry enough to talk business tomorrow.
Gingivere heard the sound of an upstairs door opening. Someone was coming. It was Clud, accompanied by Ashleg and Fortunata. A key turned in the lock of the cell to the wildcat's immediate left. He heard Clud's voice giving orders.
Right! One in here and one in the cell on the other side of the prisoner, whose name must not be mentioned by milady's order. They must be kept apart!
When the trio had departed, Gingivere reflected upon this new development. Whoever the prisoners were, he knew that Chib the Robin would be interested next time he visited Kertia. Chapter 18. Young Dinny the Mole knocked upon Bella's study door with his heavy digging claw.
Hello? Who is it?
Gomp's voice rang out from within.
It be young Din. Miss Goody sent o' you with these here vittles for ye.
Martin opened the door and admitted the Mole, balancing a tray of food. Young Dinny blinked. The inside of the study was a mass of dust, scrolls, open drawers, and general confusion. As Bella took the tray from the Mole, Gomp leaped upon him from the desktop. They rolled about together on the floor, wrestling and hugging each other at the same time. Gomp laughed joyfully.
Young Din, where have you been keeping yourself, me old digging mate?
Dinny gained the upper paw and sat on Gomp.
Where have you been, Sir Gompin? You're my getting fatter.
Gomp introduced his mole friend to Martin, while struggling to heave Dinny off.
Matey, this is young Dinny, the strongest mole in Mossflower.
The young mole allowed Gomp to get up. He smiled modestly as he shook paws with Martin.
Nah, I bain't the strongest. My old grandfather Dinny, he be the mightiest mole in these here parts, even though he's seen many summers. I be honoured to meet ye, Martin.
Martin took an instant liking to the friendly mole. They sat and shared the food while Bella explained the nature of the search. Dinny gazed around at the masses of dusty scrolls littering the room.
I'd best lend a poor old winner'll be upon us afore he finds out.
The search was proving long and fruitless. Cupboards were turned out, the desk was emptied, shelves were scoured without success. The bulk of the scrolls were mainly old Brockhall records. Some were Bella's recipes, others dealt with woodland lore. None of them filed in any system. Bella brushed dust from her coat and sighed.
Oh, I'm afraid it's all a bit higgledy-piggledy. I've been meaning to put them in order for some seasons now, but I never had time to get round to it.
Martin banged his paw on the desktop in frustration.
If only we knew Oof!
A secret drawer shot out from the desk, catching the warrior mouse heavily in his stomach. He sat down, surprised and winded. Bella took the single yellowed parchment from the drawer and read its contents aloud.
To the mountain of fire where badgers go, the path is fraught with danger. The way is long and hard and slow, through foe and hostile stranger. The warrior's heart must never fail or falter on his quest. Those who live to tell the tale first must turn the crest.
Gonf looked bemused.
Is that all?
Martin took the parchment and scanned it carefully on both sides.
Yes, that seems to be it.
Bella sat in her chair with an air of resignation.
Well, there doesn't appear to be much to go on.
Dinny tapped the parchment with his digging claws.
It'd be a start, though. This year's a clue, mayhaps.
Martin brightened up.
Of course. It tells us how to start. Look, those who live to tell the tale first must turn the crest. Bella, you would know. What does it mean by turn the crest?
The badger pondered a while.
I think it refers to the Brockhall shield. That's the badger family crest. It takes the form of a shield with the great oak of Brockhall on one half and the stripes of a badger on the other. Beneath it is a scroll bearing our family motto, to serve at home or afar.
But where is this crest and how do we turn it?
Gone fast, scratching his whiskers. Bella stood up.
I know of at least two places where it may be seen. The first is on the door knocker of Brockhall, and the second over the hearth in the main hall. Come on, let's try them both.
The four friends trooped out to the front door, where Bella seized the rusty iron door knocker and twisted it sharply. The old metal snapped under the considerable strength of the badger, who stood holding it in her paw with a slightly guilty expression.
Oops, I think I've broken it.
Young Dinny shrugged.
Never mind, Miss Bell. My grandfur'll fix it for ye. Where's t'otherin?
The crest over the hearth was carved into the top lintel of the wide fireplace. Martin turned to Bella.
I think I'd better try this one. My paws aren't as heavy as yours. Could you lift me up there, please?
Bella obliged by picking the warrior mouse up as if he were a feather and placing him on the broad lintel. Martin leaned over, gripping the protruding crest that had been carved on the fire-blackened oak root beam. He tried turning it without success. Gonf climbed nimbly up beside him.
Here, matey, let me try. Maybe you haven't got the magic touch.
From his pouch, the mouse thief drew a piece of cheese and rubbed it around the edges of the crest.
Give it a moment for the grease to work its way into the cracks. It shouldn't take long. This mantle's quite warm from the fire.
Gonf's talents had not been wasted. After a short interval, he wiped his paws upon his jerkin and gave the crest a skilful twist. It moved.
Here, matey, lend a paw. Jiggle it from side to side with me like this. Pull outwards as you do.
Martin assisted Gonf. The entire crest started to move outward. Bella stood ready to catch the hollow wooden cylinder. It dropped into her waiting paws. Martin and Gonf eagerly clambered down from the lintel. Dinny danced about excitedly.
Do worry, Miss Bell. Is it the map of Summerlanderstorm?
The badger looked gravely at the young mole.
Haste will only put us on the wrong track, Dinny. Let us take each step carefully.
Bella upended the cylinder and peered into its open end.
Here, Gonf, there's a scroll inside. Your paws are a lot more nimble than mine. See if you can get it out without damaging it.
The clever mouse thief had the parchment out and opened in a twinkling. They studied the writing. It was a bold and heavy old-fashioned style. Bella smiled.
The paw of my grandsire, old Lord Brocktree, did this. You must understand that only male badgers went to Salamanderstrom. Each one left clues for his son to follow. This was written for my father, Boar, to solve. Unfortunately, Boar had no son to leave a map for. So, after he had solved Lord Brocktree's riddles, he carefully replaced everything, in the hope that one day another young son of our house would find them.
Bella sniffed and looked away.
Alas, maybe my little one, Sunstripe, might have followed these clues, had he been here today.
Young Dinny rubbed the back of his velvety paw against Bella's coat.
Don't fret yourself, Miss Bell. Usn's find it for ye.
Martin had been toying with the wooden cylinder. He shook it and tapped the sides. Some leaves fell out.
Look, Bella. What do you suppose this means?
The badger shrugged.
They're just old leaves. Let's see what the parchment says. Boar is badger, named after wood. Not after forest, but trees. Where did you play on a rainy day? Where did I eat bread and cheese? Search inside, stay indoors. Look up and find the secret is yours. Your castle, your fort, or so you thought. The way is in four trees. The way is in boar in Brockhall, under ale, under bread, under cheese.
Martin leaned back against the fireplace.
Phew! That's a right old riddle and no mistake.
Back in Bella's study, they sat pondering the evidence. A long time passed, and still they could not even begin to unravel the complicated thread of the poem. Gomph was becoming disgruntled. He lay on the floor, drumming his paws against the armchair.
Huh! Woods and trees and bread and cheese, rainy days and castles and forts. What a load of old twaddle!
Dinny had commandeered the armchair again. He sat back with his eyes closed lightly as if taking a nap.
Keep ye poor still, Gomphin, I be a-thinking.
Bella pursed her lips and crinkled her brow.
Boar is badger named after wood. I never knew my father was named after a wood.
Gomph rolled over onto his back.
If he was named after the wood, he'd be called Moss Boar or Boar Flower or Moss Boar Flower.
Martin silenced the mouse thief with a stern look.
Please, Gomph. We're supposed to be solving the riddle, not fooling about. The second line tells you that boar is not named after the forest, but after the trees.
I bain't never heard of no boar trees, nor I spect as my grandfer.
Dinny chuckled. Bella agreed.
Neither have I. There's elm and birch and sycamore and all kinds of trees, but no boar tree. I wonder if it's an old nickname for some type of tree.
Gomph sat up.
Say that again, Bella.
The badger looked at him, puzzled.
What? You mean about boar being a nickname for some kind of tree?
No, I think I see what Gomph means.
Martin interrupted.
You said there were all kinds of trees, like elm, birch, sycamore, and so on. Dinny, where do you think you're off to? I thought you were helping us to solve this riddle.
The young mole trundled out of the study, calling over his shoulder.
Brr, that be exactly what I'm a-doing. Going to get the old leaves what you'm founding a-for.
Of course, the leaves!
Gomph leapfrogged over Dinny's back before he was out at the door. Dashing back into the main hall, he scrabbled about, collecting the leaves, while Dinny followed up, berating him.
Yer, that be my ideas a-gomphin', e-girt mouse bag!
They brought the leaves back to the study between them. All four looked at the dried, withered specimens despondently.
They're only dead leaves, many seasons old. But what are they supposed to mean?
Bella touched them lightly with her paw.
Well, let's see. There's four leaves here, an ash, an oak, a rowan and a beech. There's nothing written or sketched on them. What do you make of it, Martin?
The warrior mouse inspected the leaves. He arranged them in patterns, turned them over and rearranged them, shaking his head.
I don't know. Ash, beech, rowan, oak. Rowan, oak, beech, ash. Search me.
Gomph smiled in a highly superior way.
Listen, matey, it's a good job I'm a prince of leaf puzzle solvers. Try this. Beech, oak, ash, rowan.
Is this another one of your jokes, Gomph?
Bella asked, eyeing him sternly. Gomph placed the leaves in order, still smiling.
If it is a joke, then it's a very clever one, you'll admit. Beech, oak, ash and rowan, in that order. Can't you see? It's the first letter of each one. B, then O, then A, then R, spells boar.
Bella shook his paw warmly.
You're right. Boar is badger named after wood. And look at this line lower down. The way is in four trees.
Dinny clapped his paws together with excitement.
Oh, joy! Now we'm a-getting somewheres. Right, thinking carps on.
Yes, look at this line. Search inside, stay indoors. At least we know the map is somewhere in Brockhall. We don't have to go out scouring the woods.
But we're indoors.
We're boar played on rainy days.
Boar the fighter playing?
Oh, aye. He must have played when he'm a little un.
Good thinking, Din.
Now, where did I eat bread and cheese? Do you think that'd be Boar having his lunch?
Nay, that'd be thy grandfer, Miss Bell.
Of course. Boar was very close to old Lord Brocktree. It's quite probable he'd be playing around near him while Brocktree was eating.
Aye, but there's the difficult bit. Your castle, your fort. Where's there a castle or a fort inside Brock Hall?
No, no, look at the next line. Or so you thought. Didn't you ever play make-believe with something when you were little?
Ha-ha, I still do, matey.
We know that, sir. Come on, Miss Bell. Show us where Boar did play when he were a little'un.
They wandered haphazardly from room to room. Every so often, Bella would stop, look about and shake her head, muttering.
I'm not too sure. My father never talked too much about playing when he was little. Besides, I wasn't even born then.
Martin paused between the passage and the main hall.
Then think for a minute. Did your father ever say where Lord Brocktree went to eat his bread and cheese?
Not really. I expect he ate it at the table like any civilised creature would do indoors.
The table!
They hurried into the main hall to where the huge dining table stood. Gonf wrapped it with his claws.
Well, a good start, table. Looks like it's made from elmwood. What do we do now?
Bella had a faraway look in her eyes.
Wait. I remember now. Lord Brocktree was a crusty old soul. I recall my father telling me that he refused to eat at this big table. Said he needed a spear to reach for things from the other end. So one day he made a table of his own. Just big enough for him to sit at, and handy, so that his bread and cheese and ale were all close to pour. It's out in the kitchen. Grandfather loved the heat from the oven. Besides, he used to dip his bread into any pans of sauce that were cooking. He liked it out there.
Standing in the kitchen was the very table Bella had told them about. Gonf climbed on top of it and stood looking upward.
Doesn't make sense, matey. All I can see is the ceiling. The riddle says, look up and find the secret is yours.
Bella sat in the chair, spreading her paws across the table.
This is it. The answer is in this table somewhere. Look, my grandfather made it from beech, oak, ash and trimmed it with rowan wood. Do you know, I can picture my father sitting at this table, just as his father did before him, eating bread and cheese and drinking October ale.
Martin had not spoken. He was staring at Bella as she sat at the table. It came to him like a flash.
While you played underneath it, it probably had a tablecloth on it then.
Bella smiled at fond memories.
Yes, a big white one. I would pretend it was my tent.
The warrior mouse scrambled underneath the table.
Not Boar the fighter, though. He'd probably pretend it was a fort or a castle. Ah, here's an odd thing. Underneath here is covered with a few pieces of chestnut bark. Pass me a knife, Gonf.
Martin worked away underneath the table, cutting the chestnut bark and tossing it out. The other three inspected each piece of bark for clues without success. Dinny sniffed it and raked it with his claws.
Oh, foozlem! There bain't nothing here!
There's something here, though. It's the map!
Martin's voice could not conceal his delight. He came tumbling out with a pale bark scroll in his paws.
It was laid between the bark and the table. Look, it's covered with strange writing.
Bella took the scroll.
Oh, this is ancient badger script. Right, back to my study. I'll have to translate it. Thank you, my friends. This is the route to Salamandastron. Once we've solved it, you're on your way.
Chapter 19. Gingivere hacked away at the cell wall. Immediately the guards had gone, he set about trying to communicate with the prisoners on either side of him. From the damp mortar between the stones of his cell, he had prized loose a spike that had a ring attached to it for securing unruly prisoners. Armed with the spike, the wildcat selected a damp patch on one adjoining cell wall and worked furiously at the mortar around a stone which was not quite so big as the others, forming the barrier. Soon he had it loose. Digging and jiggling, he pulled and pushed alternately until the rock slid out, aided by a shove from the prisoner on the other side. A small wet snout poked through.
Hello, Cox. It's me, Ferdy.
Gingivere smiled, glad to hear the sound of a friendly voice. He patted the snout encouragingly.
Sorry, old fellow. It's not Cogs. I'm Gingivere, a friend. Cogs is in the cell on the other side of me. You stay quiet, and I'll see if I can get through to him.
Thank you, Mr. Gingervere. Are you a wildcat?
Yes, I am. But no need to worry. I won't harm you. Hush now, little one. Let me get on with my work.
Thirdy stayed silent, peering through the hole at Gingervere, who was hacking stolidly at the opposite wall. It took a long time. Gingervere's paws were sore through grappling with the stone, chipping the mortar and pulling this way and that, until the rock finally gave and shifted. With Gingervere pulling from one side and Cogs pushing from the other, the wall stone plopped out onto the floor.
Hello, Mr. Gingervere. I'm Cogs. Is Ferdy there?
The wildcat shook the paw which protruded from the hole.
Yes, Cogs. If you look, you'll see him through the hole from his cell.
The two little hedgehogs looked through at each other.
Hi, Cogs.
Hi, Ferdy.
The guards will be coming shortly with bread and water for me.
Gingervere interrupted.
I'll share it with you. Go back into your cells now and stay quiet. When Chib arrives tomorrow, I'll let him know you two are here.
Gingervere replaced the stones without much difficulty. He sat awaiting the guards with his daily ration of bread and water, realising for the first time in a long and unhappy period that he was able to smile again.
Ah, questing, oh, the friends did go, companions brave and bold, o'er forest, field and flowing stream, cross mountains high and old. These brave young creatures journeying along the road together, while birds did sing throughout the spring into the summer weather.
Gonth, will you stop prancing about and caterwauling while we're trying to solve this chart? Dinny, chuck something at that fat little nuisance, will you please?
Martin scratched his head as he and Bella turned back to the scroll. Young Dinny obliged by hurling an armchair cushion that knocked the mouse thief flat upon his bottom.
There, that'll keep his soul in a piece, Sir Gonfin. You're a right little noise bag. Stand on my tunnel, you mar.
Gonf lay on the floor, resting his head upon the cushion. He hummed snatches of further new verses he was planning. Martin and Bella pored over the writing on the scroll, gleaning the information and writing it upon a chart with a quill pen. The wording was in ancient badger script that only Bella could translate. Young Dinny called out from Bella's armchair where he was ensconced.
What we gotten so far, Martin?
Martin read aloud.
Given to Lady Sable Brock by Olaf Skyfurrow, the wild goose. After she found him injured in Mossflower and tended his hurts, the beacon that my skein finds its way to the sea by is called the Strange Mountain of Fire Lizard.
Here Martin had marked the star with the word thus. Salamandastrum.
We of the free sky do wing our way there, but if you be an earth walker, it will be a long hard journey. Here is the way I will tell you to go. I begin as I fly over Brock Hall. Twixt earth and sky, where birds can fly, I look below to see a place of wood with plumage green that breezes move like sea. Behind me, as the dawn breaks clear, wood pigeons come awake. See brown dust roll twixt green and gold, unwinding like a snake. So fly and sing, the wild goose's king. O'er golden acres far below, our wings beat strong and true. Where deep and wet, see flowing yet another snake of blue. Across the earth is changing shape, with form and colour deep. Afar the teeth of land rise up, to bite the wool of sheep. So fly and sing, the wild goose's king. Beyond this, much is lost and missed. But here and there I see the treachery of muddy grey. 'Tis no place for the free. O feathered brethren of the air, fly straight and do not fall. Onward cross the wet gold flat, where seabirds wheel and call. So fly and sing, the wild goose's king. The skies are growing darker, see our beacons shining bright. Go high across the single fang that burns into the night. We leave you now as we wing on. Our journey then must be where sky and water meet in line and suns drown in the sea. So fly and sing, the wild goose's king.
Gonf came across and stared at the scroll.
Well, old what's-his-name Skyfurrow was nearly as good a bard as me. Bet he wasn't half as clever a thief, though, matey.
Martin shook his head.
It's certainly a strange route to follow. Given in goose song, written in ancient badger and translated into common woodland. Do you think we've missed anything, Bella?
The badger looked indignant.
Certainly not. It's all there, word for word. I'll have you know that female badgers are great scholars. Though I must say it all looks very cryptic to me.
Young Dinny clambered out of the armchair and squinted at Martin's neat writing.
Triptych? What be that? Stand on my tunnel, it'd be worse than making holes in water, over.
Gonf stifled a giggle.
You certainly have a way with words, Din. Ah, well, let's get our thinking caps on and imagine we're all sky for us.
Martin clicked his paws together.
Right, that's exactly what we have to do. Imagine the ground from up above, as if we were birds.
Sarmina stood watching the dawn break over Mossflower from her chamber window. Mist rose in wisps from the treetops as the sun climbed higher in a pale blue cloudless sky. The Wildcat Queen was highly pleased with their latest plan. The woodlanders must have realised the two baby hedgehogs were missing, and they would send out search parties. Sarmina detailed Clud and another weasel named Scratch, acting as his deputy, to patrol the woods along with a picked group of 20 or so. They would travel light, unhampered by the usual Katir armour. They could act as a guerrilla force, lying in wait to capture any woodlanders they came across and sabotaging resistance wherever they encountered it. She watched them slip out of the perimeter gate, armed with their choice of weapons and equipped with rations. The Wildcat Queen curled her lip in satisfaction. There was no need to try interrogating her two prisoners further at the moment. Let them stay in their cells until they were starving. It was always easier to interview creatures who had not eaten for a few days. Two small hedgehogs trying to pit their wits against the Queen of the Thousand Eyes. What chance did they have? Scratch was a fairly observant weasel. He jabbed skyward with his dagger.
See that robin, Clud?
Clud noted that Scratch had omitted to call him Captain. He looked up, but Chib had flown from view.
What robin? Where?
Scratch sheathed his dagger.
You've missed him, Dal. I could have sworn it was the same bird I've noticed hanging about outside the barracks a few times. Always ends up somewhere near the ground, hidden.
Clud was reluctant to believe that Scratch was more alert than he.
It might be summit or nothing. Woodlanders don't usually have much to do with birds. Still, we'd best be on the safe side. Oi, Thicktail, make your way back to Katir and tell my lady about that robin. Don't breathe a word to anyone else, though. I don't want Ashleg or that fox stealing any of my credit.
Thicktail saluted and jogged off in the direction of Katir. Scratch looked at the thickly wooded area they were in.
Perhaps we'd better lie low here a while. That way we can have a rest while we keep our eyes and ears open, eh, Clud?
Clud knew the idea was a sensible one, but Scratch was beginning to annoy him with his insubordinate manner.
Aye, I was just thinking the same thing myself. Right, lads, pick good hiding places and keep your eyes and ears open. But just let me catch anyone snoozing and I'll have his tail for a bootlace. That goes double for you, Scratch.
As the special patrol dispersed among the trees, Scratch stuck out his tongue at Clud's back, muttering beneath his breath.
Clud the Clod, thick as mud.
Thicktail did not like being out in Mossflower alone, even in broad sunny daylight. The stoat scurried through the trees, looking furtively from left to right as he went. He repeated Clud's instructions aloud to himself.
Tell the Queen that there's been a robin redbreast hanging about Katir grounds. It flies down low and vanishes near the floor. Clud thinks that it might be something to do with those woodlanders. Now I'm to say nothing to Fortunata or Ashleg. If they ask me, I'll just tell them that I had to come back because I sprained my paw. I'd better practice limping on it just in case.
Argulor was making a wide sweep from Katir over the forest. This way he could fool anyone at Katir into thinking he had flown away. He was about to circle back when he heard the voice below him and saw a stoat limping about in the undergrowth.
I must tell the Queen that a robin has seen Clud hanging about... No, that's not right. I must tell the robin that Clud has been hanging the Queen...
Argulor did not require perfect sight to tell him where his next noisy meal was. He dropped like a stone to the forest below, a stone with talons and a curving beak. Bella's study was still awash in a litter of old documents. They slid from the desk, which still had its secret drawer hanging askew. Several food trays stood balanced here and there amid the dust. The scroll and four leaves that had led the friends to the roof lay on the arm of the big armchair, where Dinny sat snuggled in its deep cushioned seat. Bella leaned against the desk. She did not mind the young mole borrowing her favourite chair, though he did seem to be growing rather fond of it. Martin paced up and down. At each turn he had to step over Gomph. The little mouse thief lay stretched out on a worn carpet that covered the study floor. Martin was having trouble imagining himself as a bird. The mere mention of heights made the ground-loving young Dinny feel sick and dizzy. Gomph, however, was displaying a fine aptitude for a mouse bird.
Ha! I look below to see a place of wood with plumage green that breezes move like sea. It's as plain as the whiskers on your face, mateys. He means good old Mossflower Woods, right where we are.
Bella closed her eyes, picturing herself in flight.
I suppose that our woods would look like water moving in the wind from above. Carry on, Gomph. What's next?
Behind me as the dawn breaks clear, wood pigeons come awake.
Brr! Don't you and see? Dawnbreak! Sunrise! Goosebird be a-telling us'ns to traverse westerly!
Young Dinny called out from the armchair. Martin shook Dinny's paw.
Good mole! Of course! If the sun rises in the east and dawnbreak is behind him, then he must be travelling due west. Well solved, young Dinny.
The mole gave a huge grin, settling deeper into the armchair.
Oh, this year young mole ain't only a digger. I see they woodpigger waken at dornin'. Grr, terrible noise bags they be, all that cooin'. Go on, what's next bit of poetry?
Gomph continued.
The poetry says, see brown dust roll twixt green and gold, unwinding like a snake.
Bella nodded knowingly.
Aha! Friend Olaf gave me an easy one there. I know the very place. Between the woods and the flatland south of Katia, the road has a twist in it. I've walked down it many times, and thought it was just like a snake trying to slough its skin.
Gomph shuddered at the mention of snake.
So, mateys, we walk through the woods, heading west, and cross the path below Katia. Then there's only one way we can go, straight out across the flatlands and the open plains, like the poem says. All the golden acres to where the snake of blue lies. Ugh, snakes.
That's no snake, Gomph.
Martin interrupted.
It's the same as Bella's winding road. But this one is blue. It's a river. What puzzles me is the teeth of land eating the wool of sheep line.
Bella stretched and yawned.
Ooh, I think we must be going stale sitting around this dusty old room. Sheep and land, wool and teeth. Oh, well, maybe we can't see the wood for the trees. But whatever it is, you'll know it when you see it. What do you want to do? Sit here half a season solving riddles, or follow the clues you already have, and work the rest out as you go along? The supplies are packed and ready. You have your weapons, wits and youth to help you along. What more do you want?
Gomph supplied the answer.
A good matey to walk by your side through thick and thin.
Yuns bain't leaving this year mole behind.
Martin and Gomph laughed heartily. Bella bowed apologetically to the mole.
Forgive me, Dinny. I did not know you wished to go questing.
The young mole heaved himself up onto his hind paws.
Brr, you try and stop I, Miss Bell. Though I do hate to take leave of yon armchair.
Chapter 20. The Corrin plan was beautifully simple. A party of woodlanders would set out with haversacks of provisions from a point near to Katia, and Shib was to be given the rations one sack at a time. That way, he could make short journeys to the cell window, passing the food into Gingivere. Abbess Germain had reasoned it all out. The woodlanders were helping by carrying the food. Chib would not be overtaxed by making many long flights, and Gingivere would secretly share the rations with Ferdy and Cogs. Later, there would be time to mount a rescue operation, but it needed a great deal of careful planning between the Corrin leaders. In the hour before dawn, the two parties sat eating an early breakfast provided by Ben and Goody Stickle, hot scones fresh from the oven, with butter and damson preserve and mugs of cold, creamy milk.
Look at these otters and squirrels packing it away. You'd think it was going away nigh on 3 seasons.
Ben Stickle mumbled through a mouthful of hot scone. Goody topped up his beaker with milk.
Listen to the leaf, Carl, and the grass green. You're worse than any of them, Ben Stickle. Just you mind those 2 little hogs of mine don't go hungry. See, they get their rations.
Skipper took the spare scone in his sling pouch.
Don't fret your head, marm. They'll both take on a cargo of victuals afore evening bell.
Lady Amber raised her tail and waved it.
Righto, form up. Woodlanders carrying provisions in the centre. Squirrels and otters forming guard on flanks and scouting ahead. Martin, your party can walk with us part of the way.
The sun was not yet up as they left Brockhall through the still slumbering forest. Both parties stole silently into the trees, waving goodbye to Bella, Abbess Germain and Goody Stickle, who stood on the sward outside Brockhall. The old Abbess tucked her paws into the long sleeves of her habit.
Let us hope that both parties are successful.
Goody Stickle blinked back a tear.
Let's hope my Ferdian cogs get their proper nourishment.
Bella watched the last of the party vanishing into the thicknesses of moss flower.
Aye, and let us hope that Martin can bring back my father, Boar the Fighter, to save us all and free us from the vermin of Katir.
It was close to midday. Scratch and Clud lay beneath an old hornbeam. All around the troops lay hidden, most of them sleeping soundly. Clud had spotted 1 or 2 soldiers and was about to recall them to duty with his spear butt when Scratch suddenly put a claw to his lips for silence and pointed to a break in the trees. The woodlanders marched by the sleeping soldiers, unaware that they were being watched. Skipper strode boldly in the lead, twirling his sling. Some of the otters had relieved the carriers of their loads. They strolled along, conversing with the loam hedge mice. In the middle terraces of Sycamore Plain and Elm, Lady Amber swung from bough to limb with her arches. Scratch and Clud watched the passage of the curious band in silence. Clud hoped that none of the soldiers would waken noisily. He could practically taste reward and promotion. Rubbing his paws together in excitement, he nudged his companion.
By the claw, that lot can only be headed to one place, Katia. Wait till the Queen hears about this, eh, Scratch?
As he rose, Scratch shoved him roughly back down.
Shh! Look over there!
Coming through the trees in a slightly different direction, Martin, Dinny and Gomph marched along a path that would take them due west, skirting Katir on its south side. Columbine had walked with Gomph, but now their paths were to part, and she hurried away to join the others. As Clud watched, he made a mental note to pace Scratch back for banging his nose down into the dirt. Unaware of his captain's displeasure, Scratch listened to the strains of Gomph, singing his farewell to Columbine as she waved to him with a kerchief.
Goodbye, Columbine, now your path and mine must part in the woods of Mossflower. Keep a lookout each day, for I'll be back this way in the noontide or cool evening hour.
Scratch cackled, fluttering his eyelids. He picked a daisy and sniffed it gustily.
Ah, isn't that romantic now? The young mouse singing farewell to his sweet... Ouch!
Clud wrapped him smartly between the ears with the flat of his spear blade.
Shut your trap, nitwit. You want the whole forest to hear you? These three aren't going to Katia. Oh no, they're bound for someone else. Now listen, greasy ears. Here's what I want you to do. Take 2 others and follow them. Don't let them out of your sight. Find out where they're going and why, then report back to me.
Scratch rubbed the top of his head indignantly.
Oh, yeah? Go off and follow those three. Who knows where they're going or how long it'll take? You must think all the acorns have dropped off me tree, Clud. I know where you've been, mate, grabbing all the glory for yourself.
Yes, m'lady. No, m'lady. 3 bags 4, m'lady. I saw them first, m'lady, so I've sent daft old Scratch off chasing the odd three.
I'm onto your little game, weasel.
Clud seized Scratch roughly by the ear and began twisting savagely.
So... open rebellion, eh, Scratch? Now listen to me, you scruffy half-made excuse for a soldier. If I have to report your disobedience to Her Majesty, she'll have you staked down on the parade ground for eagle meat, do you hear me? Now get going, Wormbrain. Here, you two, Blacktooth Ferret and Spitnose Stoat, grab weapons and supplies. Go with Scratch. Jump to it! That's a direct order from me.
The sulky-looking trio skulked off, muttering.
Old bossy boots, Clud, eh?
Ha! How he ever got to be captain, I'll never know.
Take that spear away and he'd fall over flat on his nose.
Aye, Zarmina's pet. the baby hedgehog catcher.
Clud waited until they were gone, then shouldered his spear.
Right, me laddos, up on your paws. We'll take the shortcut north back to the garrison, then my lady can arrange a warm welcome for our woodland visitors.
Clud put the remainder of his force into a swift jog trot. Soon the spot where the three paths had crossed was deserted, as the last soldier vanished into the bright leafy shades of Mossflower. Towards evening, Sarmina grew restless. She had the two prisoners brought up from the cells. The Wildcat Queen was reluctant to admit to herself that she could not get the better of two little hedgehogs. Hunger, she decided, was a great tongue-loosener. Ferdy and Cog stood before her, their eyes riveted to the big tray of crystallised fruit and nuts. Sarmina popped one neatly into her mouth, delicately licking the sticky sugar coating from her claws one by one.
Delicious. I'll wager that either one of you two young'uns could eat this entire tray in one go. Come on now, don't be shy. First to talk a bit of sense gets them all.
Cogs licked his lips. Ferdy grasped his paw and spoke out for them both.
I'd swap all that lot for just one slice of our mum's apple pie.
Sarmina smiled winningly.
Of course you would. I suppose your mum makes the best apple pie in all Mossflower.
Cogs wiped his damp whiskers with the back of her paw.
Oh, I'll say she does. Hot out the oven with fresh cream poured on until it floats.
Sarmina nodded agreeably.
Lovely. That's just the way I like it. By the way, what do they call your mother?
Ferdy was caught completely off guard.
Goody.
Goody what?
The Wildcat Queen kept up a friendly purr. Cogs kicked Ferdy and interrupted.
Goody, goody. We love our mum's apple pie, and that's all we got to say.
Sarmina scowled irritably and pushed the tray of sweetmeats away.
Guards, take these two little fools and lock them up again. They'll learn what hunger is a week from now.
As they were marched off, Cogs shouted bravely.
Aye, and you'll see how woodland warriors can still behave 2 weeks from now, cat.
Far below at the prison window bars, Chib earnestly discussed the new plan with Gingerbeer. Gonf was first to complain as evening fell over the woodlands.
Phew! It's a while since I trudged this far, mateys. What do you say? This looks a likely place for the night. Then we can get a fresh start in the morning.
Young Dinny inspected the site. It was a dead chestnut stump, with a small hole between the two main roots.
Urr, I know this year, gaff. Slept here many a night. It'll do.
Martin crouched as he made his way into the confined space.
Just about enough room for the three of us. We'd better call it a day. Break out some supper, Gonf.
While Gonf set the food out, Dinny scooped loam around the entrance, leaving a small space for observation. The mole had no sooner finished his task when he held up a paw.
Usher now, come by here and look it.
Silently they gathered round and watched as Scratch blundered noisily through the undergrowth, followed by Splitnose and Blacktooth.
Look out, the bogey clad's behind you.
That chance, he'll probably be stuffing his face back at Katia.
Aye, and getting ready to sleep in a dry bed too.
No sign of the mice and the mole yet, Scratch.
It's getting so dark I can't see my own paws, let alone mice and a mole. Come on, let's get clear of this forest while we can. If we reach the road, there's a dry ditch where we can camp the night.
Hey, Blacktooth, stop scoffing those rations. There'll be none left for us.
Ah, there's plenty. Anyhow, I'm starving.
You starving? I haven't had a bite since breakfast myself. Here, give me that food.
No, I won't. Let go, you big grabber.
Yeah, I'll take charge of that, you two. Gah, you greedy nits. It's spilled all over the place now. You've dropped it.
It wasn't me, it was him. He shoved me, clumsy paws.
Clumsy paws yourself, greedy guts. Take that.
Oh, I'll report you to Clad when we get back.
I'll go and report your mother.
In the hole beneath the chestnut tree, the three friends held their sides in silent mirth, tears running down their whiskers as they watched the antics of the searchers, who fumbled and bungled their way off into the darkness, still arguing and fighting.
Grr, my goodness, Uzzin's been hunted by those hollerheads. Brr, yon vermins couldn't hunt their way out of a shallow hole.
Gonf handed cheese to Martin.
No wonder. Did you hear who their boss is, matey? Oh, Clud the Clod.
He couldn't order his own two ears to stand up straight.
Martin put his supper to one side.
Maybe not, but he was smart enough to spy on us without our knowing it. I think we should treat them as enemies. That way we won't be caught off guard. Anyhow, let's get some supper and sleep. We've got a long day ahead tomorrow.
From the window of a high chamber, Sarmina's eyes pierced the night with the keenness of a predator. She saw Clud and his special patrol hurrying to Katir from the north fringes. Then, sweeping her gaze in an arc, she noted a movement at the south edge of the forest. Woodlanders! Sarmina rushed to the table and rang her little bell vigorously. A ferret named Raker came scurrying in.
Quickly, alert the entire garrison. Have them form up inside the barracks awaiting my orders. Tell them to be silent. Send Clud to me. He'll be arriving shortly.
Raker wondered how Sarmina knew of Clud's imminent arrival, but he did not dare ask her how. He held up his thousand-eyed shield in a smart salute.
Right away, milady.
Sarmina peered intently at the band of otters, mice and hedgehogs. She noted the ripple in the treetops. Squirrels, too. This time she had the elements of surprise on her side. She did not intend wasting it. Now they would learn the meaning of the word fear. Halfway down the stairs, she bumped into Clud, who was dashing up to her chamber to make his report.
Milady, I have gathered some expert knowledge on the movements of the woodland.
Yes, I already know. Form your patrol up and get down to the main barracks quickly.
But, Majesty, there was a robin flying through the woods, and I told...
Sarmina whirled upon the slow-witted weasel.
Robin? What rubbish are you spouting now? What do you think I care about a robin? Get out of my sight, you useless lump.
Clud stood bewildered on the stairway as she brushed past. There was no point in trying to talk to Sarmina when she was in one of her moods. The highest tree near the south side of Katir was a stately elm. Chib was perched in its branches when he sighted the woodlanders.
Harumph! Over here, please, and keep quiet. We don't want any eagles waking up.
Skipper threw a smart nautical salute with his tail.
Ahoy there, mate! Is everything shipshape?
Chib paced to and fro upon the branch.
Well, I must say it appears to be, though I have my doubts.
Lady Amber dropped in beside him, and the nervous robin leapt with fright.
Madam! Kindly have the goodness to announce your presence in a less startling manner.
Ben Stickle and the rest were unloading packs of rations at the foot of the elm. Columbine looked upward at the robin.
Do you know, Ben, for some reason I feel as uneasy as Chib.
Ben loaded the packs on the squirrels, who scampered up the trunk as if it were level ground.
Aye, my dear. I know exactly how you feel. I don't like this place one little bit myself.
As if to punctuate the hedgehog's remark, an arrow whistled out of the darkness to stand quivering in the elm bark.
Ambush! Everyone take cover!
Lady Amber called aloud from her vantage point. Immediately, the mice and hedgehogs were screened by a wall of otters. Skipper bounded to the fore, ducking a spear as he swung a sling loaded with several stones.
Over yonder, crew! By those thickets! Give him a rattling good broadside, mates!
Ranks of brawny otters made the air rain heavy with hard river stones. The dinting and thudding of rock upon armour and pelt was mingled with screams and cries from the ambushes. When the fusillade slackened, Sarmina sprang forward, urging her attackers onward.
Charge! Rush them now! Up! Charge!
The soldiers pounded toward the woodlanders, yelling and shouting threats as they waved pikes, spears and javelins. Lady Amber watched coolly. She notched an arrow to her bowstring, as all around her in the high branches, squirrels followed her example. She laid her tail flat along the bough of the elm.
Steady in the trees there. Let them get well into the open, then watch for my signal.
The one or two otters were down with spear wounds. Skipper had heard Amber, and he backed up her strategy.
Otter crew, load up! Don't sling until the arrows are loosed!
Now the Katir army had covered over half the distance. Fortunata slacked off, dropping back with Ashleg and Clud. Sarmina alone led the field. Confident that the charge would carry the full distance, she turned to yell further encouraging words to her troops. Lady Amber decided they had come far enough. Her tail stood up like a banner as she called,
Archers! Fire!
The waspish hiss of arrows halted the advance in its tracks, the back and middle ranks colliding with the fallen in front.
Slings away, hard crew!
Skipper's wild call boomed out across the melee. A second volley of stones flew thick and fast into the confused soldiers. Now Salmina was forced back into her own ranks. Furiously she began snarling out orders.
One rank crouching, one rank standing. Give me a wall of shields to the front and carry on advancing. Poke spears out between the gaps in the shields. Quick, fools! Fortunata, group archers at the rear. Tell them to fire over our heads into the woodlanders. Hurry!
Realisation that they were in danger of being under serious attack galvanised the Katir troops into action. Ben Stickle and Columbine were crawling about, whispering to the non-combatants.
Friends, help the wounded. Go with them quickly and quietly around the back of this tree. Thormal has arrived with help.
They slid away with Skipper's crew masking their retreat. The soldiers were firing arrows now. They rattled off tree trunks and stuck into the earth, some finding their mark among the woodlanders. The shield-fronted advance moved slowly but steadily forward. Skipper and Amber had coordinated their firepower. After the otters loosed stone and javelin, the squirrels shot their arrows, each giving the other a chance to reload, while keeping up continuous fire.
Slings away!
Archers, fire!
Brush and Birch were two big, competent squirrels. Following Lady Amber's directions, they swung off toward Katir's further side, carrying as many ration packs between them as possible. Chib flew with them. All three were silent and unseen by those in the fray below. Clud's bellow urged the soldiers forward.
Come on, you lot! Stir your stumps, you laggards! Keep pushing on! We'll have them soon! You can have an order apiece shortly!
A stoat winced as a rock bounced off his spear shaft, sending shocks of pain through his claws.
I'll have a mouse or a wounded hedgehog, mate! Let Clud and the Queen tackle those big otters!
His companion, a weasel, nodded agreement.
Aye, let them have the glory. We'll be satisfied with the pickings.
Seconds later, he was silenced by an arrow. Lady Amber was beginning to get worried. She called down to Skipper.
We're almost out of arrows up here, Skip. There's too many of them. We can't stop their advance. It looks as if we've had it.
Skipper's tongue was lolling as he tore off two large rocks from his sling.
There's nothing for it, Marm. We'll just have to see how many of them we can take with us.
Chapter 21. Early morning was enveloped in white mist. It clung to tree and bush like a gossamer shawl, sparkling with dewdrops and the promise of a hot sunny day ahead. Eager to be on their way, the three friends broke fast as they travelled. Martin unpacked scones for them. Gonf doled out a russet apple apiece, and Dinny vanished into the mist, reappearing with a canteen of fresh spring water. Limbs loosened as the night's stiffness receded. They stepped out at a brisk pace to Gonf's latest marching chant.
Salamandastron, look out, here we come. A thief, a warrior and a mole. Though the quest may take its toll, we'll march until we reach our goal. Salamandastron.
The flood of morning sun penetrated the mists, melting them into a yellowy haze. Martin and Gonf struggled to keep straight faces, listening to Dinny chanting the marching verse in mole tongue.
Saladana scorn, look at Yuri come.
Still in fine fettle, they reached the outskirts of Mossflower Woods. Pushing on through the fringes, they found themselves facing a brown earth road, which curved and bent like a snake. Beyond it lay the far dim expanses of the flatlands, shimmering in the heat. Between the path and the flatlands was a deep ditch, though because of the dry weather, it contained only the merest trickle of water. The companions kept silent, remembering that Scratch and his aides might well be somewhere nearby. Gonf went back to the woods and returned with a long stout branch. Taking his knife, the mouse thief trimmed off the twigs. Martin watched with interest.
What are you up to, matey?
He asked, keeping his voice low. Young Dinny knew.
He making a pole to jump ditcher. Squirrel beast do it, effin they bain't no tree to swing offen.
Martin took the pole and felt its balance.
Oh, I see. A vaulting pole. Good idea, Gonf.
Making sure his grip was firm on the pole near its top, Gonf levelled it in front of him.
Me first, Dinny next, then you, matey. Watch me and see how it's done. I'm a prince of vaulters, you know.
Gonf broke into a fast trot.